This is the Shift Podcast.
Today on the Shift Daily Podcast, author S. Bear Bergman breaks down special topics from his new book on being human, including how to show up for people in your life and how it can change your life when you do. The Earth is really weird and very, very special. Greg Fish shares the science behind why this one in a billion little marble is ours, plus why other inhabitable planets would look and feel very different than home. Maybe we should take care of this one. On the International Dispatch, Sir Christopher Gilbert from Japan shares the stories of a racehorse with a very unique name. Plus, is it possible to use dog poop to frame a dog? A man in Turkey tried it. It's all coming up on the Shift Daily Podcast.
This is the Shift Podcast.
We do like to take a little bit of a tour all around the world from time to time. We have Brennan Kelly here, Ryan O'Donnell, and it's time to welcome back in Sir Christopher Gilbert with the International Dispatch.
Welcome to the International Dispatch from our world citizen. Live from Japan, New Zealand's Chris Gilbert.
That computer is just killing you tonight, eh, BK?
It's not fun.
It's been one of those nights, eh, Brendan?
Oh, yeah. It is. Everything's just not clicking quite right. You know what was cool? We had Sunshine Sparkle Pants. He was producing the show last night. Jason Manalis was here. Sir Christopher Gilbert, our producer before Sparkle Pants, is here. It's like the whole band is back together. This is fun for me. How you doing, Christopher?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, I got the rundown in my email from Sunshine Sparkle Pants, and it's exactly what I thought. Like, oh, Sunshine Sparkle Pants is producing the show tonight. It must be a rosy cherry rainbow time. But no, I'm good, mate. I'm great. Like, nothing to complain about over here. It's been a very normal week. The snow is starting to fall in the mountains, so might go snowboarding sometime soon. Everything's out on the up and up, to be honest. Yeah.
On the up and up.
How are you?
Sir Christopher Gilbert, if you don't know, he's from New Zealand. Then he was in Japan, and then he came to Canada. Then he worked on the shift. He was one of our shift head teammates, family member, if you will. Then he was like, peace. And he left and went to Japan. And this is where he resides now and joins us now through the power of technology and recently married and handsome as ever now. And any updates on the nuptials? I didn't get my invite for New Zealand yet.
Updates on the nuptials. There are two updates, one of which I read a story today that 60% of Japanese newlyweds are choosing to get married without a ceremony at the moment. Much as I did, I just had a little picnic and I had a dinner with some friends and we went out and we partied for a while, but you know, like wedding ceremony in quotation fingers. And so I'm not alone. 60% of people here are choosing to do, I mean, it's really easy just to go down to your city office and just get married. Blim blam, thank you ma'am, done. You know, the other update is it looks like my home country New Zealand next January or February is going to just end its quarantine system. And as I've complained about many times in the show before, New Zealand has a very, authoritarian, like I guess you could say, quarantine system where you have to stay in government mandated hotels. You have to get a voucher for that particular date. And it's very hard. You have to pay for it yourself. And it's going to end those for New Zealanders early next year. And for non-New Zealanders, April 30th, I believe. So party at my house, everybody, next summer. Come along. It's going to be a good time.
All right. Catherine sends in a text message. Hi, Chris. Is there Starbucks in Tokyo?
Is there Starbucks in Tokyo? Catherine, it's Starbucks. Tokyo is the Starbucks capital of the world. People, L-O-V-E, love Starbucks. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why. But actually, I'm very proud of my hometown, Wellington, because it's the only place I've been to in the world where Starbucks tried and failed. It had maybe in the mid-2000s, like a peak to like eight branches around Wellington. And now I think it's down to one. But Tokyo is everywhere, absolutely everywhere. So yes, Catherine, the answer is yes, there's Starbucks in Tokyo.
There it is. Take us on a tour around the world with the International Dispatch here, Sir Christopher Gilbert.
Let's stay in Tokyo. Shane and Ryan and Brendan and family in general, are you familiar with
sumo wrestling?
Use it in a sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One might think sumo wrestling, and this wasn't brought to my attention until maybe an hour or two ago. I just did a segment on New Zealand radio a couple of hours ago, and the host there told me about this. It hadn't come across my radar, but there is a racehorse in Japan called sumo. That's sumo, and it's become incredibly popular, and for obvious reasons. And the other day, it won its first race. And after 12 attempts, it won its first race. Here is some commentary.
Congratulations.
This was some. I can't say that on the radio. It's just too hard for me. But the commentator did say it. He tried to say it. He succeeded. And this is what it sounds like when it's said correctly.
前に出ます200の標識を通過3番デイカ外から追い込む1番スモモモモモモモモさらに外から追い込んでくるのは11番ショコラノワーレ前は8番のスターオブブーケ外から1番のスモモモモモモモ追い込んでくる1番のスモモモモモモモモ圧勝だ今ゴールインスモモモモモモモモ鮮やかな勝ちっぷり安城町田直樹騎士
I'm coming to Tokyo just so I can hear this kind of stuff. This is amazing.
Yeah, no, that's pretty special. So go on, Shane.
Well, I was going to say, it reminds me of, maybe a Christmas special. And please, sir, can I have some more, more, more, more, more, more, more?
It actually has a meaning. It actually is a tongue twister in Japanese. So it's, sumomo is plum, and momo is peach, and mo is a connector, which kind of means like two, like T-O-O, two, or as well as. So, sumomo mo, momo mo, so, which means like peaches as well as plums, momo, peaches. So, plums, both plums and peaches are peaches. Sumomo mo, momo mo, momo. That's a momo, momo, momo, momo.
Momo, mom, please, sir.
It gets a little better than that because it's actually an abbreviated version of the full tongue twister, which means sumomo mo momo momo momo sumomo momo momo no uchi. That's the full.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Wow. My head hurts.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna have sumomo mo nightmares.
Yeah, I said that to a friend on Messenger just before I came on. I was telling him about some more, and he just said to me, "How does that work?" You know, and it just sounds like a bunch of moles, but it's not. Yeah. You got to put the commas in. If you don't put the commas, it's just more. But if you put the commas in, it's more no uchi. So there you go. You're welcome. That's your Japanese grammar lesson for the night.
I love that, and somehow, even with all the momos, I feel like Ryan could get a typo in there somewhere.
Momo. Momo.
Momo.
Momo.
It sounds like someone's blowing bubbles, Catherine says, underwater. That's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. No, I can't say it. It's even after being back in the country for a year, like I can't get that many moles out of me. It's too... I can't even make a joke. It's just too much for me. It's too much for my little brain.
Too many momos.
So I want to move on from this bit that I created myself and can't finish.
Shall we?
And move to Turkey. Dog poop, Shane. Dog poop is what we're talking about in Turkey. Dog poop it's been politicized. You know, the honorable name of dog poop is being dragged through the dog poop. A man has tried to frame a popular stray dog in Istanbul by placing feces on a tramway. You may remember that my hometown Wellington has Mittens the cat. Istanbul has this dog. It's a stray dog called Bulgy the dog. The story goes, a Turkish man has tried to frame Bulgy the dog by placing poop on a tramway. According to footage shared by the Istanbul municipality spokesperson Murat on November 20th, Bulgy the dog was framed, I tell you, by a man who placed poop on the tram after carrying it in his pocket. everybody. In his pocket. Poop in the pocket. The man's identity currently remains unknown. Also, Bulgy has an alibi. Apparently, it was revealed he was in the shelter on that day. So Bulgy is clear. The footage was shared by the spokesperson in response to claims that Bulgy pooped on a tramway, which was circulated on social media, overwhelmingly seemed to be supporting the ruling party, the AKB. So the AKB, the ruling party, Erdogan's party, is trying to frame Bulgy. Why? Because Istanbul is a city no longer run by the AKP, excuse me, is now run by the CHP. And it's kind of like, I guess you could say, a guerrilla war using dog poop going on. The incident is the latest in a row between the CHP Istanbul municipality and the AKB. Framing a dog, however, is a new low. Erdogan's AKB lost the mayoralty to Istanbul a couple of years ago, and ever since he's been in a constant effort to defame the mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu. And so I'm not really sure how putting dog poop on a tram defame somebody. Can you, anybody point that out to me, how this works?
Well, disobedient puppy, I guess. Get rid of the dog. Dog made a poopy.
It's a stray dog. So, like, if the dog actually did poop on a train, you'd be like, oh, there's Bulgy. There's the dog we all love and we talk about all the time on social media. Oh, Bulgy pooping again. No, some guy carried poop in his pocket. I mean, like, I see people, you know, people, you're like, you're walking down the street and they're carrying the dog poop. Oh, there's my, I don't know if you heard that, but there was a big pong ping in my room. And that is someone telling me that someone's at the door. They're going to have to wait.
You want to take us to the door and answer it all at the same time?
Uh-huh. Oh, do you want to do some live radio? I don't know. It doesn't look like, I've got a little camera and it doesn't look like a mailman. It looks like someone who probably wants to talk to me, so I'm going to let them go about their merry way. Especially, it's 5:15 at night. Who's coming to my door? Especially when I'm on the radio.
That's weird.
Anyway. Oh, sorry. My partner is giving me the X sign now, saying, don't answer the door. It's okay. I'm not going to. Sorry. That was some live radio for you, everybody.
Life happens. Hey, there was another video that I saw. It was just one of those TikTok memes about a guy. He went out to his truck. And if someone had smashed his golf cart into his truck, he wanted to know who did it. So he went to his security camera footage on his house, and he saw that the dog had climbed under the golf cart, stepped on the gas pedal, and crashed it into his truck, then got off the golf cart and walked away. I feel like that's a good reason to get mad at the dog, right? Like, that's a good reason to go, that's a bad dog. He crashed my golf cart into my truck. But for a dog going poop on a tramway, I don't feel like that's something you could really get upset about.
I mean, my main question would be, did the dog, you know, do it on purpose? You know, like, did the dog getting into the golf cart be like, you know what? Screw this guy. I'm tired of him. He never takes me for walkies. I never get treats anymore. You know, he teases me about my weight. I want to just get in this golf cart, drive it straight into this truck, give him the paw, and then, you know, just trottle off.
Flip him the paw?
Yeah, flip him the paw. Flip him the middle paw. Helen.
That's good.
Helen in New York. Helen in New York has had a coffee table for about 60 years now, which turns out that is actually a priceless Roman mosaic, centuries old, essential to, you know, like, the cultural discourse of all human history. Where has it been? People have been wondering. It's in Helen's New York studio apartment, everybody. That's where this priceless mosaic is. Yeah, Helen had it all this time. Long lost mosaic commissioned by Emperor Caligula disappeared from an Italian museum during the Second World War. Dario Del Buffalo, an Italian expert on ancient stone and marble, described how he found the mosaic in an interview on CBS's 60 Minutes on Sunday. It's been long lost for 50 years. He was in New York in 2013, and oh God, I have to say the name again. I murdered it the first time. Del Buffalo was giving a lecture. He was sending copies of his book. The book included a picture of this long lost, beautiful, to be honest, mosaic, which once formed part of the floor of two vast, quote, party ships commissioned by Caligula. I wonder what Caligula was doing on those party ships on a lake near Rome, and it sunk when the emperor was killed. The mosaic and other antiquities were recovered from the lake in the 30s and 1944. You know, as often happened, a whole bunch of stuff went missing for some reason in Europe. Not really sure why that happened. Nearly 70 years after that, again, he was sending copies of his book, and he overheard a man and a woman being like, "Ah, look at that. Look at this picture in this book. You know, and look at that. That's your coffee table there, Helen."
Wow.
And Helen's like, "Yeah, that's my mosaic." And the buffalo was like, "Oh, this is your mosaic. This is an ancient Roman mosaic." And I'm going to stop at this point in the story, just at the absolute audacity of someone to be at probably what is like an art history lecture in New York, flip through the book and be like, "Oh, that's my thing." It's not yours. Wow. Obviously, it's not yours, Helen.
That's how amazing is that? I think it's cool that it, but yeah, the person overheard the conversation too, right? That's the neat part. That's cool.
I know.
Do you get paid for that? You know?
I mean, I guess you mean I'm assuming for some reason, Shane, that all of these people are quite wealthy. Helen Fioretti is an art dealer and gallery owner. According to an interview she gave to New York Times in 2017, she and her husband, an Italian journalist, bought the mosaic from an Italian noble family in the 1960s. When it arrived in New York, the couple turned it into a coffee table. And I don't know why, but this kind of puts a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth. I don't know why. I'm just like, I find it a little bit
it's pretty pretentious.
Audacious. Like, is that the word, pretentious, audacious? To turn it into your coffee table, like where you put, I mean, the thing is that on coffee tables, what do you put on coffee tables apart from your feet and coffee? You put coffee table books. And the thought of some awful, like just humans of New York, you know, like 16 kilogram heavyweight hardcover just boom, onto this beautiful mosaic, which was part of a ship, is to me just makes me think, Helen, can you? You just treat your ancient artifacts with a little bit more respect, please. But I don't know. That's just me.
I think you're right. I think it's. I just don't know at what point where you go, this is from a ship at the bottom of the ocean. Amazing. Look how beautiful and old whatever this thing comes from. It'll make a good table.
Yeah.
That seems weird to me.
Yeah, I know. They probably have like some kind of a Nordic mast from a Viking ship as, you know, like their bed headboard and.
Did they cut it up though to make bedposts?
Yeah, just cut it up and put it all probably the coffee table legs, you know. And just
we sound very jaded and jealous of rich people. Is what we sound like.
Well, you know, like I'm in my mid 30s now, Shane. So I am jaded and jealous, to be honest. You know, and
I love it. All right, it's the International Dispatch here. So, Christopher Gilbert, do you want to talk about this haircut? Are we going there? Are we taking this? Or,
oh, you know what? Let's just whip it out. A Palmerston North man is furious. This is Palmerston, New Zealand, small town. Please imagine Hope in BC, kind of like that. Mm-hmm. He's small furious. Town. Yeah, he's furious at a hairdresser for cutting his hair. The salon is called Just Cuts, which, by the way, no judgment, but is this like your In-N-Out burger, like you jump in, pay $5, get a trim, jump out again, right? It's hardly a salon. It's a butcher of a barber. He's 23 years old. He'd grown his hair out over 2 years. He went to Just Cuts in the mall on Friday looking to get it cut and styled back to shoulder length. He wanted his girlfriend's hairstyle, which was similar to him. So she came along and she asked the stylist to use her hair length as a reference. The hairdresser, however, was like, no, darling, you don't want that. You look much better with a short back and sides. And by the time he realized what was happening, it was too late but to sit and fume, the story says. This is my favorite line. She started at the back where I couldn't see her working. And I trusted her because she kept saying she has 20 plus years experience. And wow. Oh, mate, if you're getting your hair cut and your barber keeps telling you over and over again, don't worry, I've got 20 plus years experience, get out of the chair and run. You know, like no one talks about that many times. She made a few strange comments as she cut, including, "You don't want that haircut. You'll look like a girl." But he says, quote, "I'd given clear instructions, so I took her comments as boomer attempts at banter." He only realized what the it's great, right? He only realized what the hairdresser was doing when she reached the sides. She moved from the back, and he could see the sides. I'm sorry. By the way, if you're sitting in a chair and you've got more than shoulder length hair, and she's cutting it to a short back and sides, and you can't tell that she's doing that because she's standing behind you, like you can't see massive clumps of hair falling to the floor. Yeah. Then I'm sorry, mate, you deserve what's coming to you. Like you like one snip and you can say stop. Anyway, he's angry. He has short hair now, but look, your hair is going to grow long again. The main reason this is a story is because it's a story, and everyone on the internet is being like, why is this a story? It's a story so I can talk about it on The Shift in Canada. That's why it's a story. Hair short hair. Love with it, mate.
Vet your barber. There's your takeaway from the International Dispatch. Sir Christopher Gilbert live with us from Tokyo. Great to see your face, Chris. Thanks for being here, bud.
Nah, thanks, guys, and I'll talk to you next week.
This is The Shift Podcast.
Oh, one of the friends of The Shift, a shift head, if you will. S. Bear Bergman is back with us to have some conversation because he's got a new book out. And Special Topics in Being a Human is the title of the book. Congratulations on the book, buddy.
Thank you very much. It's a slightly strange little book, but I feel very fond of it.
But it's not that strange. I mean, if I just say Special Topics on Being a Human and just let that be that, that is one thing. And there's this bottom part here in the white. I'm holding it up.
Subtitle.
Yeah, the subtitle. Thank you. A queer and tender guide to things I've learned the hard way about caring for people, including myself. Now, if you take the queer part out and you just make it a tender guide, this appeals to everybody. And the queer part is just part of your journey. So this is exciting and incredibly important for everybody to hear this conversation, Bear, because we don't take care of ourselves. And we claim to take care of the people around us, but quite often we try, but we don't. Is that fair?
I mean, I think that a lot of us have very good intentions, and I don't think our impact matches our intention sometimes. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what Special Topics in Being a Human is about. It's about helping people to make their impact and their intentions match. You know, when you want to be helping or caring for someone or loving someone and they're not having that experience, that's hard, man. Yeah. Like you're trying your, you know, it's one thing if you're not trying and you're not getting much done, but when you're trying and you're not having the result that you want, which I think is a very human experience, it's some of the most heartbreaking moments of my life. Certainly. And I think that's probably pretty true of other people as well.
Well, you talk about challenging your self-worth when you go into somebody that you care about and you do everything that you can in your mind to care for that person and you push them away because it's not working. But that's the magic. That's the phrase, right? It's not that you're a bad person. It's not that you're doing it wrong. There's no right or wrong in doing you. But if it's not working, it's not working. And it really is that simple of a look, but that's a hard place to find when you're all tangled up with emotions and who you are and your self-worth and am I in the right job? Am I in the right relationship? Am I in the right skin? I mean, like, there's all kinds of ways that we get tangled up on. You can't say all the wrong stuff because it is the right stuff, but at the same thing, it's not really where the destination lies.
Yeah, and I think that's an extremely... It's an extremely common place that people sort of, I don't know, flail, that we reach a point where we are clear that we want to proceed, that what's happening isn't working, but we don't know what to do. We don't know how to make a change or which direction to try first or how to be heard or how to hear other people, it's very easy to just feel stuck and overwhelmed and like, all right, well, fine, I'm just going to take my toys and go home.
Mm-hmm. And we do that.
Yeah.
A lot.
We do that.
I did that even in conversation with family and friends and loved ones in the last couple of days, just in the, I'm putting my phone down just so I don't get interrupted. I've had enough. Put my phone down. I mean, that's me taking my toys and going home. We do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But we usually don't want that when it happens.
No.
Right? We don't go into a conversation hoping to be alienated. We go in hoping to be connected. You know, we want to be in relationship with other people, whether those are familial relationships, friendships, romantic relationships, work colleagues. Like, we want those relationships to work smoothly and in ways that are mutually satisfying.
Yeah.
We don't want to take our toys and go home. And so, you know, we keep trying, which is a thing I love about people. We're not the brightest, but we will 100% keep knocking our heads against the same wall.
Yeah.
Just trying to figure out how to make it right in a place or with a person.
Do we get tangled up on the other side of that? Because we sort of have the this outcome and this intention of what I meant to do. Like, hey, Bear, I meant to give you a compliment about your hair today, but it really came out wrong because you heard it as you didn't like my old hair, but now you like whatever. Where the true compliment could be just, hey, you're handsome, right? Like, whatever. And I always say that with shirts and pants. I always work hard. This is a big thing for me, and maybe it's cheesy. That's cool. You can make fun of me. But I will say, that shirt looks good on you is a much different phrase than you look good in that shirt.
Yes, I think that that is, I think that that is true. It is a very different phrase. I mean, I think we do get tangled up on all sides. I also think that, you know, sometimes we're getting very clear information from other people about what they need, whether a specific individual person or a group of people or a situation, but we don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want that information because it doesn't feel however we want it to feel. And so we let it go, or we don't trust it. And we 100% do it to, well, I'll speak for myself. I do it to myself. I am the absolute reigning monarch of making sure everybody else eats, making sure everybody else is getting enough sleep and has warm socks and is, you know, tended to. But I'm not very good at doing those things, or the less concrete things like speaking kindly to myself when I've done something foolish.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it. I can remind you all day.
Right.
You know, if you came to me and you were like, man, I really messed it up. I did a terrible job. I'm such a fool or whatever. I would say, you know what? You did your best, and let's not talk about someone that we like that way. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just, you know, I wouldn't let you talk smack about yourself and get down on yourself. I would remind you that, you know, we need to talk to ourselves at least as nicely as we would to a stranger that we met on the bus. You know,
is that a listening problem or is that a speaking problem? Because to me, what I hear there is that our listening gets compromised first, which is hard to control, especially when you're speaking into someone's listening.
That's a good question. I think a lot of it is listening. I think our listening gets occluded in certain ways. You know, it gets gummed up with all the other stuff. You know, everything that a boss tells me also goes through the same listening space as everything every other boss has ever told me. And sometimes they just get like, you know, they get clogged like your arteries with all of the difficult or unprocessed or bad things from before. And then it can be, can be pretty challenging to hear people as they mean to express themselves. But also, to be fair, sometimes I'm not very good at expressing myself. I get stuck in my feelings and I start talking about, I start trying to control how someone experiences my message rather than just telling them what I think or what I feel.
Yeah.
And it's 100% that I'm going to get turned around and not in the right direction when that starts happening. And it's not a lack of care. It's an abundance of care. I really want them to hear me in a certain way.
Yeah.
That's not apparently how human beings work. You can't tell them what to think. You can just tell them what you think. I really resent that whole situation.
Yeah. Well, it has to be defined that way. That's my don't should on people. Works well. So inside the book with S. Bear Bergman, Special Topics in Being a Human. I do like the human, actually. Especially in being I love those memes. I think that's great. So that makes me giggle. But you talk about, in this book specifically, you get into some of the nitty-gritty about how. And one of my favorite things about the way you write is you often get into, here are some tips on the how. The why is one thing, and we can, you know, be philosophical about the sparkles and rainbows and all the things about the hippy dippy experience that we go through. When you drill it down, though, including, you know, when you're talking about how to care for yourself and care for others, pros and cons lists, they work.
Yeah, they do, especially if you annotate them. That's the thing that I think is critical about a pro and con list is, you know, you also have to look at it and think which ones of these have a big emotional resonance for me and which ones are just procedural. Cause you can end up with a list that has, you know, 10 pros and 4 cons. But when you look at how those things make you feel, one of the pros feels like a big yes, but 3 of the cons feel like big no's. You can't always just count, right? Mm-hmm. You got to take the other parts into consideration also, I really feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we often fill out those lists with what we think we should be doing versus what we want to be doing. And identifying that, when you say annotate it, circling the pros and cons that matter to you or make you feel uncomfortable could also get you to that point about, why am I even doing that? Like, I hate volleyball or something. I love volleyball, but I hate volleyball. So you could go like, why am I worried about this today? Why is it on my mind? Which means that you could sort of find your way a little bit on it. But you also talk about this part. You say, figure out who your no ladies are. And that's the people around you, right? How important is it to identify the people around you in this conversation when even, say, you take that list and you say, can I get your feedback on this? Because you're going to have people that are going to come in and say, no, that's dumb. And they're going to fill it with their own agenda as opposed to what's best for you too. So how do you sort through the positive influences, the negative? I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine named Corey. Corey, he's works hard all week, parties hard on the weekends. Right? I mean, that's his thing. There's been times where he's reached out and said, hey, I'm just going to hang out with you tonight because that means I'm going to get home at a decent time. So he's identified who the enablers are and who the have a good time and Shane's probably going to kick my butt to the curb at, you know, midnight or 1, not 4 in the morning. How do we find that?
So the concept of the no ladies, Abigail Disney from the, you know, Mouse family, she writes, she's written a lot about how her dad, when he took the Disney company over again, he really surrounded himself with yes men. And whatever idea he had, no matter how ill-conceived, they would just tell him his idea was the best idea. And he went off and did whatever. And it almost ruined the Disney company, right? Mm-hmm. And so she says that her commitment is to make sure that she knows who her no ladies are, which is like the opposite of yes men. Actual ladies are not required. Any gender of person is fine for this.
Yeah.
Right? But your no ladies are the people who will love you and hold you and support you no matter what, and will tell you before you go out and make a fool of yourself doing something ill-considered, right? You're no people can't be every, it's not like open up your idea to all of everyone and sort through the feedback. It's a few people who you can, that you can go to and say, this is what I'm thinking about doing, right? Like, you're going to propose marriage, or you're going to have a third baby, or you're going to open your own business selling, I don't know, personalized pudding cups, right? These are the people that you, I don't know.
These
example. Are the people that you go to and you say, this is what I want to do. What do you think? And you trust them that they're the ones who will say, if they say, yes, it's a good idea, it means they really think it's going to work out for you. And if they don't, they will say, maybe we want to keep this in the draft stage a little longer and talk it through.
Those I want to get it. Yeah, I want to get a dog, Bear. I'm really busy. Should I get a dog? Right? Even that would be an example.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and if you're going to get a dog, of course, you need to talk to whoever would be your, you know, would also cohabit with the dog. But also, you know, we naturally understand this because we reach out to people all the time to say, you know, do I want to switch my season tickets from the five side to the one side? Or do I, you know, want to buy a bounce house for the backyard in the spring? My kids are pestering me that they want one, but looks like a one-way ticket to the emergency room for me, or whatever, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
We solicit help and feedback, but when we have a heart project, or when we have like a big thing that we want to do, I think that it's incredibly valuable if we can go to the people who love us enough that they will tell us if we are about to make a mistake.
That's hard to find. Those people are very, very, very special. Now, there are so many topics in this book. We could probably have a weekly conversation for a year. And so I'm going to reserve the rest for our next chance to talk about it, with the exception of one piece.
Okay.
And that's showing up, because I think that the things that you've described are very relevant to everybody, right? And I didn't even get a chance to get into, I'm excited to get into the bear journey on this, right? Through this. So I want to hear those stories. But in the spirit of doing it all the proper service, let's finish today's conversation with showing up and presence and all of those things that matter, because really everything you've talked about so far really does center in on showing up and being able to have those people around you that are going to show up for you, not just give you lip service and truly be present. So how important is that in the special topics in being a human?
Extremely, extremely. There's a chapter called, you know, something like how to love someone with your actions in addition to your feelings, which I'm sure are very nice. And there are, you know, other similar things as well. I think that we know instinctively, we all know that showing up for our friends and family is the critical piece, is how we want to be in the world. You know, and as soon as there's bad news or something bad happens, right, like you want your people to arrive. And if, you know, something bad happens to your friend, you know, my first thought is always like, what do you need? How soon can I be there? Like, what's that going to look like? I think that showing up is one of the most valuable ways to show love. And there's a great book, which I think is maybe even called The Art of Showing Up by Rachel Miller. Well, you'll have to look it up, but Rachel Yep. Miller is the author, and I'm pretty sure it's called the Art of Showing Up. Rachel Wilkerson Miller, and she really digs into the question of, you know, are there things that cannot be improved by the consistent presence of someone who cares about us. And, you know, the conclusion is there aren't very many of them.
Yeah.
There are very many things that can't be improved in that way. So I think you're really right. Like, as a distillation, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. So let's start there. And I'm going to create a challenge for you and for everybody and myself.
All right.
So it's easy for us to talk about showing up for others, but to hold you into account for what you also said to me in regards to getting into this process and caring for yourself, which is in the subtitle, as you described it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you willing to take on? And I'll start, if that helps, to show up for yourself, because that's not easy sometimes. And this is my invitation for everybody who's listening. And I'm going to say, for me, it's actually going to be something as simple as walking. I haven't been walking, Bear. I used to walk all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got some bad joint stuff in my shoulders. So working out is not easy. And I use that as an excuse, of course. At the same time, though, caring for myself, showing up for myself, looks like setting aside time and commitment to walking. So as an example for everyone who's listening, what would you be willing to take on, something in your life that you haven't been able to do, and share that with us?
Ugh, I hate this question. It's much easier to tell other people what they should do than to talk about what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's
why I ask.
I know. That's why they let you do this in public for money. I won't say too much on the radio, but there's a situation with a friend of mine that has felt complicated. They want a lot of resources from me about it that I don't really have, and so I've just been avoiding it, and that's not right. So I need to have the conversation that I need to have with them and say, listen, this is what I can reasonably offer you right now, and stop just feeling constantly bad about it but also not taking action. And instead, I need to be in touch, and I need to say, you know, I love you and I care about you, and I cannot in this moment do all of the things that you would like for me to do. So let's figure out what I can do to be helpful to you rather than continue this terrible pattern where you feel ignored and I feel like I'm avoiding you. And both of those things are true, because I need to own that I cannot actually help everyone all the time, even if it seems nice. I hate it, but it's true.
It's true. And it's like a backpack with rocks in it. We carry it around, and my fitness and walking is every time I go up and down the stairs, I get reminded about, oh God, I got to go for a walk. Oh God, I got to go for a walk. Right? Like when you see that something come up for that friend, you're like, oh, I got to talk to friend. And it's incredibly important. I'll offer you this, though. I actually just went through that in the last 4 days with a friend of mine. We used to own some property together, and we have some unresolved things around it. Well, I don't. He does. And I really want to close the joint account that we had, and it's been nagging for months. And he even said to me on Thursday, he said, let's talk Friday. And I replied back. Here's me being a dick. I replied back, there's nothing to talk about. You have the information. I want the account closed. I didn't even listen to what he was saying. So then on Friday, he called me regardless, even though I told him no. And I've known this guy forever. Like it's almost 30 years. And I call him a brother. He called me and he explained what he was going through and how there's some stuff he's carrying from that era that he doesn't even want to deal with. And he recognized it and he wants to take it on. And he shared his heart with me. And boy, did I ever feel stupid, because I wasn't listening to him. Here's the thing. Conversations I've had, Bear, and I feel like I have my friend back, and I feel like I'm going to get the resolve that I really want. I don't need to close the accounts. I just want to get it all cleaned up. Mm-hmm. I don't really need to. It's not really affecting me. And so here I am tangled up in my own stuff. And 4 days later, I feel incredibly free. So I hope that inspires you with a little kick in the pants.
It does. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will also say, if you are hoping to walk more, you should get a dog.
There you go. Nice. Well put. Tying it all together. S. Bear Bergman, author, and so many other things awesome. Special topics in being a human. I love it. It's actually a really great book because it's very animated, kind of cartoon style, with comic book kind of style, with very easy to read all in caps, easy to understand. There's some tasks, there's some ideas, there's some storytelling and more. We have many more visits to dig into all of these amazing topics, including Bear's story. I look forward to hearing that. Thanks for being here, bro. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking to you.
This is the Shift Podcast.
WorldOfWeirdThings.com is Greg Fish's website, and he's here.
Welcome to the World of Weird Things with Greg Fish.
You okay there, Fishy? I find it ironic your name is Greg Fish and you just choked on a bottle of water.
Yeah, it happens sometimes. The wonders of evolution. We can survive and thrive for millions of years and yet be killed by drinking wrong.
Yeah, right? Wrong tube.
The breathing tube. See, as an engineer, I find it problematic that the feeding tube is next to the breathing tube and the two kind of just have to close each other off at the right time. It's frustrating.
We need a redesign. Is that what you're saying? We need a 2.0 for human design?
We need a redesign. Yeah, we need a redesign. Get a geneticist. Probably
a little unfair, really, when you look at the billions and trillions of cellular processes that are going on every single day to keep us alive. I mean, drinking water seems a little simplistic.
That's true, but you know, if we're doing all of these very complicated cellular processes right, we should be able to drink water right. That's all I'm saying.
So when a computer science engineer starts looking at the human body then, and you're going to reprogram version 2.0, then what are the changes you would make? Obviously, breathing tube and drinking tube side by side sounds dumb. That makes sense. Gills is way more efficient.
There's a lot of changes. You know, there's some extra limbs that would be workable. Some things should be removable and swappable much more easily. There should be some expansion slots. Like, there's a lot. I have an entire running list.
Nice. It sounds like Inspector Gadget is really what you would do.
Sure, why not? I mean, if I'm given that kind of creativity.
Sounds great. WorldOfWeirdThings.com, Greg Fish, where we do talk about things even more weird than physiological renos on the human body. Greg, you have a look at the planet today, our little marble that we live on, oddball Earth. Tell us about your story. Why is Earth weird?
Now, when you talk to astronomers or cosmologists about space, one of the things that they will tell you is that there is a primary rule in observing the space around us. No place should be more special than another for two reasons. First, it kind of does fit with our observations for the most part. Everywhere we look, the density of stars is roughly the same. The density of galaxies is roughly the same. Everything is expanding at a uniform rate. And aside from a couple of features that we're still trying to figure out, whether they're just kind of odd artifacts or they're actual real things in our records, it all does appear like there really isn't any special place in the universe that we can point to and say, this is really weird. This is really like not like the rest of the universe around it. The other reason is that if we actually had to say, hey, this place is special, we'd have to explain why it's special and how it came to be. And that is very difficult. And then the statistics rule against it. And I think a lot of scientists would rather just say, you know what, unless we have some very special evidence that this place is really unique, let's not bother with that. But we've also been looking around and we've been detecting planets around other worlds, and we're starting to understand kind of what the planetary spectrum looks like outside of our little solar system here. And statistically, it looks like Earth is different than your usual planet. And the reason why has to partially do with the fact that we orbit a largish white star instead of a red dwarf, and red dwarfs are almost 3 in 4 stars in the universe. On top of that, our stars like ours have an expected habitability period of about 5, maybe 6 billion years at best, while red dwarfs can last for a trillion years. And the planets that are close enough to a red dwarf to be considered habitable, to have that range of temperatures where they would have liquid water, are going to be tidally locked, meaning one side is always going to face that star. The other side is going to be always in darkness. There's going to be a little band where it's eternal twilight. So one side is going to get real hot. The other side is going to get pretty cool. There's some atmospheric convection going on, so that will be balanced out. But the equator of the day side is always going to have some sort of adverse weather in it, some sort of cyclones, storms, because you have that sun bearing down on it. There's going to be X-ray storms because red dwarfs are small enough that they convect throughout and they erupt with X-ray flares. The vegetation is going to be, if there's any vegetation on it, it's going to be black because it needs to absorb as much light as possible. You're not going to have a lot of green forests. You're not going to have probably a lot of very complex life because it's constantly being bombarded by radiation. The typical habitable world is not going to look like Earth, statistically speaking, because around long-lasting red dwarfs, those are the kinds of planets you're going to have. Those are the kind of habitable planets you're going to have. Whereas planets like ours are going to be fairly rare around fairly atypical stars as far as the stellar population is concerned, and we're going to burn out a lot faster.
Now, this is might be the kind of comment that makes a computer scientist's head explode. Isn't that where faith kicks in? Because there's two ways to go here. There's some really deep philosophy that says that being special is something that, meaning that we put on things that doesn't exist, that we live, we die, the things happen. Fundamentally, that's all it is. And there's this look that Earth is special because there was a creator for the Earth. I mean, there is definitely an creation and evolution conversation there, but doesn't that lead for someone to believe that, well, if we are the only place that can be this green and this pretty and this inhabitable, what are the odds?
That is where a lot of people go. But I feel like the problem with that particular view is that it kind of puts the cart before the... It's kind of like flips the idea on its head of, well, we are here and we are in a fairly special place, therefore it must have needed to happen. But the real question is maybe it just happened. Like there's nothing that says that we need to exist. There's nothing that says humans need to exist or we need to be like we are today. I mean, even something as simple as the fact that our plants are green. Our plants are green because, as you probably learned in elementary school, they're full of chlorophyll, and chlorophyll looks green because of how it works. But it's entirely possible that in its very early days, our flora was actually purple because of a chemical called bacteriorhodopsin. And it is a much simpler method of extracting energy from sunlight that had evolved way before chlorophyll, and it's thought that there were a couple of major oxidation events and major global upturns that there were just by chance that flipped the script from the simpler molecule to the more complex chlorophyll. And there's nothing that says one is inherently better than the other and one had to evolve. It really comes down to, do you believe that it's possible for things to turn out a certain way for random chance, and you can just enjoy the fact that, hey, I'm here, I'm alive for this, this happened, yay, lucky me, how do I capitalize on this, versus this must have happened because there's no way that my existence doesn't have some sort of special meaning. I think that's really where the divide is.
Yeah, I get that. I don't dispute it. It's a curious conversation for me, and I think that that's where a lot of people do go in this. Yeah, but if this is so special that a dwarf star is trillions of years, and our likelihood is billions of years. You know, this is how special it is, right? And I'm not diminishing anybody's belief system at all. I think they're very important. So that's not what we're doing here. But that is why a lot of people do look up and say, how is it even possible that this could happen, that this planet could be this perfect for us?
Well, this planet could be this perfect for us because we evolved on this planet. Like this, like I'm sure that there is a planet somewhere very far away that we would look at and say, oh God, we can't possibly survive there. And there's intelligent life there walking around saying, how perfect is this planet for us? And it's really amazing that we were able to evolve on this planet. Well, yeah, because you adapted to what the planet threw at you over millions and millions and millions of years, and this is the end result. Like, we are shaped by our environment, not the other way around. So that's kind of the big picture view here. And when we go out into space, although maybe I'm saying when a little bit optimistically, but I think, you know, we are explorers by heart, and we will want to venture out, and one day or another we will do it. But when we go out, we're going to have to change ourselves again. So it's entirely possible we'll have descendants thousands of generations from now walking on the world that we don't even know exists today, but will be home for potentially millions, if not billions, of our descendants, and saying how lucky we are to have evolved here. And the reality is, you didn't. We engineered you to survive here, and then evolution took over, and now you're perfectly suited for your new planet, as well as perfectly suited as evolution can make you. And there's all these changes that you don't know about, or have forgotten about, or lost your records, or and whatnot. But then again, that's bring us to, what will that world look like? Is it going to be like that typical habitable, tidally locked planet, or are we actually going to find other Earths? Because it does seem like there are definitely rocky planets out there that kind of fit Earth's profile, that are around similar stars. So we are special in a sense, but we're not so special that we are literally like one in a trillion. We are more like one in 10,000 or something of that nature. So there's more Earths out there. There's just fewer of them than one would expect there to be, just looking at the statistics.
So where do we go from here, Greg? The conversation could be about there's going to be more Earths, special places that are very far away, that takes a long time to get to. We should look there. Or it can be, how about we just mow our lawn and take care of the Earth that we have and clean up all the garbage? Which way does it go for you?
For me, it actually goes both of the ways. It is very important to look for other worlds like ours so we know that they exist, so we can understand the full spectrum of life in the universe and know as much as we possibly can. But because they're going to be very far away and it's going to take a very long time to get to them, they also need to realize that, you know, there's no planet B. The next most suitable world may be 5,000 light years away. 5,000 light years away would take eons to get to, even with the most cutting edge technology that we know of, you know, solar sails, if we make fusion work, it still will take a very, very, very long time, far more than our civilization is capable of handling any time in the foreseeable future. So there is no Earth B. You know, we can't go to Mars as easily as some people would have us believe, because terraforming Mars would take thousands of years. And there's a lot of evidence that says that it's actually not possible because there's not enough gas or material to make that happen. So really, it does come down to, we are in a fairly special place. Places like ours don't come around very often. So maybe we shouldn't treat our planet like a hazmat waste dump and actually take care of it and make sure that it's clean, and understand that we kind of don't have a lot of chances for a redo if we really screw this planet up, because we are going to kill ourselves off and there's not going to be an escape.
Wow.
I just don't think the two thoughts are that separate. Understanding the scale of the problem and and the stakes is really important.
We got really grounded in this in BC on the west coast of Canada. There's been all kinds of floods and such, right? And we had a conversation with an earth sciences guy over the last week or so, a couple of times. And he shared with us last night here on The Shift, how important is it for us to be grateful for the power of the earth? When we look at a volcano and a lava flow, for example, there's nothing we can do about a lava flow. There's actually literally nothing we can do in today's world to change a lava flow. It is going to do what it's going to do. The only solution is to get out of the way. And when you break down how powerful weather is, how powerful the earth is, whether that's volcanoes or mountains or tectonic plates and earthquakes, we start to tsunamis and all those things, we start to get a whole new level of respect for this isn't our planet. We're sort of just guests here. Maybe we should take our shoes off, you know? Am I landing in the same place as you're landing here with kind of looking at our earth differently? Or is that too hippie?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, take our most powerful weapons, the biggest nuclear bombs that we can possibly build, compared to the Earth's energy, the natural forces that we witness every day, they're firecrackers at best. You know, a hurricane unleashes millions of times more energy than our nuclear weapons. So, yeah. Again,
and consistently,
I don't know,
for long periods of time.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if guess is really the word, but I can't really think of anything better. It is very much we can alter things on this planet. We have enough of that. We have enough capability to alter things and to put up with some of these catastrophic events, but we have not been using our capability of doing that for the better, and we're always going to be at the whims of forces of nature in one way or another. Even if we do leave Earth, we have to deal with magnetic storms in space, with solar winds, with radiation. If we're on another planet, we're going to deal with its tectonics, with its lava flows, with its cyclones. The forces of nature are just so much bigger than us that if we don't understand what we're dealing with, if we don't respect what we're dealing with, if we don't take it into account when we're doing our planning, then we're going to get our asses kicked. And this happens to us all the time. And it's kind of amazing that there's a lot of communities out there and there's a lot of leaders out there who just refuse to learn this lesson, no matter how many times nature teaches it. And it's not doing it out of malice. That's the other important thing. It's not like the earth has decided to pay you back for anything. No, it's just, this is the environment. This is what happens. If you do things that aggravate it and make it worse for you, you're going to pay the price. If you're going to try and do things right and make sure there's as little pollution as possible, you're trying to use as much green energy as you can, you're trying to, you live with nature, you're probably going to weather the next storm a little better and a little easier. You're going to ride out an earthquake a little bit easier. It's just, you need to try to live with nature because you don't really have a choice. It's much more powerful than you. It will wipe you out one way or another if you don't respect it. It's just that's the way of looking at it. I look at nature as this is something I need to have healthy respect for because it will kill me without a second thought.
Well, and your body too. And I'm going to leave this here is that what we've said here on The Shift, and it's been a new talking point for me that I've come to realize, is the conversation on climate change has to stop being the excuse. Because when we use climate change as an excuse, political excuse, and blame this and blame that, we actually diminish the impact of us observing what's going on with our planet and the actual climate changes that are going on. And so when politically they use climate change as an excuse, it distracts us away from the fact that politicians just aren't doing their jobs. They're not respecting the planet. They're not respecting the people on it, and they're not taking care of it. And so this is where this sort of greenwashing conversation crosses over here. And I love this because it really becomes this point where where we use, people are using climate change as an excuse and a distraction for their lack of participation and lack of hard work. And it diminishes the true hard work on climate change that is really going on with so many great people that are working to protect all of us too. Much like we need to go to the gym and eat vegetables and take care of our bodies. So we are good hosts for ourselves in this as well. It's remarkable. And I love the lens, Greg Fish. I think it's great. I'm really glad that you brought it up and brought us this look. Cause sometimes I think one of the things that you bring to the shift that is really cool for me is when we look outside at space, sometimes it's a pretty good mirror to look back on us and go, okay, well, what are we doing here? And to Catherine's point, we even pollute space. So we're trying to pollute everything.
Yeah. And that is exactly what the point of this exact segment is. Looking into space, exploring other worlds, very much tells us about the context of our existence. It's not just, hey, cool rock over there, let's look at it. Although that's not to be diminished. You know, there's some really cool rocks out there we should definitely cool rocks, look at. Yeah. but it does give us that idea of this is our place in the universe. And this is what we need. These are the lessons we need to learn. And this is what our opportunities are. So this is very much about understanding who we are, where we come from, where we fit in the grand scheme of things, and what we should do in order to continue our survival.
Greg Fish, worldofweirdthings.com. Very insightful, sir. Thank you again for being here, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show and share with anyone you like. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CuriousCast.ca.